Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for ChartsAndMarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. And we've got another lovely Friday here, and interesting week in the markets, and I'm looking forward to the weekend. How about you?
It's going to be a great weekend because we're celebrating my wife's birthday.
Oh, terrific, terrific.
We have listener questions. Our first one comes from Justin in Berkeley. People wax poetic when they speak about Paul Volcker and his work at the Fed in the mid-80s, but was he just following the natural trend of larger, or I should say longer, private rates anyway? Does a central bank look to see where the wind is blowing and goes in that direction to maintain the kabuki theater that they have control over the economy?
Justin, kabuki theater, that is so good. Yeah, actually, I was, of course, in the investment business in 1980 when that super cycle commodity bull market completed. And then afterwards reviewed it, and even when Volcker, I guess, passed away, I wrote about a 1,000-word essay on it. And if one takes, now here's the story on Volcker, that he single-handedly ended inflation by raising the Fed rate, the administered rates. Now, if you go back in history, before there were central banks, or even during the period when central banks were responsible, you'd have a huge war, you'd have a huge commodity boom, and interest rates would go up. It happens. And then once the boom is over, commodities crash and interest rates go down. But specifically, later on, I took a look at M2 money supply through the late 70s and through 80, 81, 82. And there was no change in the growth of the money supply. So essentially, the Fed really didn't tighten. The financial markets tightened. So that then was a huge commodity boom, and particularly focused upon the gold with the attempt at the Hunt brothers on the silver corner. So it got very exciting. But it was the previous big boom in commodities was with the First World War. The commodities went straight up to 1920, and then the U.S. rate of inflation got up to 22%, and then the commodities crashed. And the rate of inflation in the U.S. got down to something like minus 14%. So the Fed spent the 20s worrying about inflation. So point being is that there have been a number of huge commodity booms and crashes, and they end on their own. And Volcker had very little to do with it except try to look like he was in charge. I'm going to get that essay out, and we'll send it to our subscribers. Then the other part of the question is that does the central bank look to see where the wind is blowing and goes in that direction to maintain the kabuki theater? Yeah, all they can do is pretend that they have control of the economy. And that's all they can do. And these business cycles are natural, and a great financial bubble is also natural, as is the subsequent contraction, which we are in now. Thanks a lot for the question.
Bob, my question is, do you have to raise interest rates in this high leveraged market where people are carrying already very high debt loads? I mean, the Fed says they're going to keep raising rates until there's blood in the streets.
Yeah, well, the reason why the Fed is raising interest rates is because the T-bill rate has been going up, and that's set by market forces. And I've got studies I've done in the past that the Fed follows the T-bill rate by 3 or 4 months, maybe 5 months. But at any rate, the reason why the Fed is raising its rates is because market rates of interest are going up. And probably it would take 3 or 4 months before the Fed lowers its rate, following the decline in, say, 3 month or 6 month treasury bill rates, which I think is close to happening. The T-bill rate is getting very close to heading down. So, no, the Fed is, let's say, kabuki theater.
A question from Michael. It's a multi-parter, so let's get into the first part. From Michael, hi, Jim and Bob. Wow, those gold mining stocks and silver are approaching the March 2020 lows fairly quickly. Bob, is it time yet to start accumulating, or will a meaningful low in the precious metal sector be seen later this year or in 2023?
Okay, good question, yeah. The irony with the gold stocks is that in the final leg of a great bubble, they underperform. And then because gold's real price goes down. And then once you get the contraction starting, selling liquidity crisis in the big market takes the gold stairs down. So this is what's happened here now. Probably the long bear market for gold since the gold sector since 2011 is completing. And I think that the market has to clear itself. And one of the things about it is that the next bull market for gold will be outstanding. And I think that technically we will be able to catch the bottom as it occurs sometime over the next 6 to 8 weeks. So, it'll be a great opportunity. And then the next part of the question?
Also, how will the European oil embargo with Russia end? Apparently, the Chinese government is reselling Russian liquefied natural gas to the European Union at a huge markup. Also, President Biden decided to sell a huge amount of the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve to China, not the EU. This all seems crazy to me, Bob. I'm confused. What's going on here?
Oh, they are absolutely crazy. It's an example of policymakers with too much power. And you've had the long promotion about global warming. Therefore, you're going to have milder winters, right? And then they decide that you have to have wind and solar energy, which are interruptible, and you don't want coal, natural gas, or oil, heating oil. And so they turn against that. And when there is no way that you can generate enough capacity out of windmills and solar cells. As a matter of fact, those two methods, it costs more energy to build a wind turbine than you can get out of its lifetime. So it's absolute madness. And then when you had the threat to the nuclear plant in Japan with that tsunami, then everybody went bonkers and tried to shut down nuclear. So the politics took and shut down reliable energy sources and efficient energy sources, and then put in unreliable windmills and solar. Now, in the 1980s, President Reagan advised Europeans a number of times not to get dependent upon Russian oil and gas supplies. But because oil and gas was evil in Northern Europe, they then accepted deliveries of those things from Russia. So, and look, at the time, you could say that they were absolutely insane. And looking back on it, that has been confirmed because they have a horrendous crisis that price of natural gas in Europe and in London has gone straight up. But my guess is that the capacity in Europe, storage capacity in Europe and in England is at the limit, so they can't buy anymore. So the prices of natural gas in those two countries comes down rather sharply. And of course, this is where Putin was timed to say he's going to really turn off the taps. You can't deliver to a system that's already full of capacity. So, and of course, it won't be enough. And a while ago, I came across a chart, believe it or not, of the price of firewood in Germany. I think it started in 2006, so it was a sideways up and down with the season annually. And then all of a sudden, straight up. So the, and then we, you know, it is the result of policymakers, two things, going crazy and two, having the power to impose their crazy ideas upon the economy and upon the social fabric. But I think that this winter will, and if you go into this post-bubble contraction gets a little worse, the public is going to be in the mood to reform a lot of this nonsense. And indeed, it's happening already. They're bringing on old coal production and trying to get some gas going, although I saw the other day that Scotland refused to allow more natural gas drilling. So, but give them a hard winter, they'll smarten up a little, I think. But yeah, it all seems crazy, which, Michael, you wrote, and that's true. And just a moment of madness.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, we now have some headlines that caught your eye. And let's stick with European energy for a second. Headline, Polish homeowners line up for days to buy coal ahead of winter.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine lining up for days? That means you'd have to have a member of your family there sleeping overnight. But then it reminds back of in the former Soviet Union, where Russians in any city would always carry a little string grocery shopping bag with them. And if they saw a lineup, they'd say, oh, there must be something there to buy. So they'd get in the lineup not knowing what was ahead of them in order to buy what was possibly available. And then maybe by the time they got to the head of the line, it had run out. So that, of course, was centralized communist planning. It just doesn't work. But here you are. Put yourself as the head of a family somewhere in Poland, and they get some winter there. And what are you going to do? You have to go through the nonsense. Mainly because the central planners have gone crazy.
Headline, Goldman Sachs says, buy commodities, worry about recession later.
Yeah, at least they're recognizing that a recession is possible. But it looks like commodities have accomplished some terrific technical excesses on the upside. And the correction has started, and I think that over the next few months, they can get pretty hard, hit pretty hard. I mean, this week, crude oil was hit pretty hard through most of the week. So this is one of the problems here, is that you've had most this year, the old inflation bugs are in full order because you had exceptional events like shutting down shipments and production of grain in Ukraine, also shipments of fertilizer. And from time to time, China shuts down whole, 30 million size cities. So there's still interruptions going on from the government side. But I think the financial markets, as usual, see through this. And with the recession, and as I mentioned, it's tied to the yield curve inverting. So with the recession, amazing things will happen. The demand will fall. And all of a sudden, supplies will start coming out. There could be tightness and shortages in the grain market over the next while. But I think the big rush in commodities and the huge enthusiasm of the inflationists is all in the market. And it's vulnerable to the next recession, which could have started already. And it's also vulnerable to the continuing uptrend in the U.S. dollar. The DX continues firm and is looking good. So there's problems ahead for commodities.
Headline, China's property market slipped into severe depression.
Yeah, and that Jim, was from the Wall Street Journal, which is not a particularly sensational reporting, but there it is. Their property market is in a depression. And that's worth reviewing. The post-bubble contraction, as I've called it, first became evident in March of 2021 when it was reported in Argentina and Turkey that their central bank had suddenly run out of reserves. So it was the classic financial crisis and slowing of the economy. And then that summer it was in China, and that's a huge economy, and it's in contraction, and then now Russia with the sanctions and stuff like that. So the world is, and including the U.S., because you've had first two quarters of the year at negative GDP growth, which is an old definition of a recession, but it's not severe yet. This may be discovered in the next month or so.
Headline. Everyone is a landlord. Small-time investors snap up out-of-state properties.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, also, when I'm driving around the car, I often have the news radio station on, and somebody's got a commercial about you as an individual landlord with a property that you're trying to rent out. You can join into this website, and they can provide all the services for you, like managing the property and all that stuff. So when you've got pros in the business setting up a system to assist individuals who are in the residential real estate market, that's a sign. And then you got this one where it's happening. Small investors are excited about property. And gosh, it goes back to the 80s when I knew some guys in Vancouver here who were active in real estate, and they were going to Atlanta to speculate in real estate there, and I could never understand it. And then, of course, in Vancouver turns out to be the hottest one of the hottest properties markets in the world. And of course, I got no idea what happened to Atlanta, but you know, probably went up. But this was the case of small individuals heading out to somewhere else to buy property. And of course, that was also the case with in the mid-1920s when property in Florida became the rage. Oh my God, they put in there was a new railroad. It went from the East Coast all the way down to Florida, and you had all this wonderful beachfront property and very speculative action. And then I think in 1927 it crashed, or began to crash, and then there was a tremendous storm that did a lot of damage. So that then failed. So the property markets are highly speculative and are vulnerable to the post-bubble contraction as it gets worse.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, hey, Jim. Good to be with you, and we look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.